Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Bijou Podcasts.
Welcome, everyone, to what is the first episode of the newly titled podcast, Bijou Baby. I'm Ben Jenkins, and across from me is my beautiful wife, Stacey June.
Hello, everyone, formerly known as Couple Goals. Firstly, welcome to anyone that hasn't listened to this before, and I imagine there'll be a few of you considering... I suppose what's been going down the last couple of weeks, and potentially some of you that may have found me and this show via unfortunate activity that's been happening in Victoria, but we'll get to that in a minute. But this has been a show where we have joined whenever we've had the chance to track our fertility journey. So you can go back in and into the site, wherever you're listening to this show, and head through season one, which will track every single step of the way to us conceiving our first child, Bryn. And then the second season has been about, I guess, still navigating extending the family, but through also being new parents. Yeah. And I find that it's a very different experience, but one really important to tell all the same, because I think as soon as you stop or think about getting your period, for example, and you start thinking about another child, which for me was as early as like 3 months, I imagine myself tandem feeding, for God's sake. So, you know, it's probably not a great thing if we were talking about a podcast and thinking about how we've already focused on the next one after Brinny. But I suppose from a timeline perspective and all of the stress and time that goes into conceiving, it is something we've always had to think about from the second it was an option for us again. So the second season is a combo of approaching conceiving
and having a toddler.
And I think it is funny because people think you get the luxury of, like, you know, maybe enjoying your first year with him and doing all those things. But actually, when you're trying to conceive and it may have taken you 2 or 3 years to get them first, you're very well aware that that process is something that's on your mind, unfortunately, quite early on after you have your child.
Yeah, you have that feeling always sitting there that you're going to have to go again. It was a long process. It took a long time to get to him. So knowing that that was going to come around again was always a sort of thought and feeling just sitting there.
Mm. So here we are. Bryn turned 2 last week. And we have been trying to conceive our second child for probably just over a year now.
Yeah.
I think we first navigated really realistically and logically, as you know, you guys know, if you are trying for a baby through fertility treatment, it is logistics, it is planning, it's money, it's personal time, it takes
a lot
getting
of energy
into
as well.
The appointments. Yeah. And we also had the logistics of transferring sperm and having come out of the back of the first year of a pandemic. So we started navigating this process living in Melbourne, and we were still kind of envisaging we would go back and forth to Sydney and Melbourne much more than we have been able to in 2021.
Yeah.
So we started the process in December 2020. So here we are in almost February 2022, and we've been navigating this whole new process. I mean, you've listened to the last couple of episodes. Perhaps if you don't know about our story, head to season one. But if you aren't familiar with our recent journey, you can listen to the last couple because we have done updates here and there. But
yeah,
essentially, we've had 3 IUI attempts. We have tried to navigate where we would keep sperm because the Sydney system and the hospital and our doctors and obviously our positive result of having Bryn was a very big factor of staying there and doing treatment in Sydney.
Mm.
But as the pandemic showed and as the last cancelled try showed for us, It was just becoming really hard in a pandemic to travel and starting to get a bit scary about really just not having any form of control over the power at be. You know, they really can make a call at any day. Like imagine one day they were just like, well, there's no couriers. And then we would have had our sperm in a different set. So anyway.
And a lot of loneliness for you. Like it's just been hard because we had to separate because we've got, you know, a little one. We've got Bryn, so...
And jobs.
We couldn't cart him around everywhere with us and, you know, expect him to sleep in, you know, random locations and, you know, Airbnbs or whatever or wherever we might be staying. And, you know, when you've got a little toddler, two-year-old, it's something that you have to think about all the time. And you were, you know, traveling on your own then. And that
was
really hard.
You also
want to
spend that money and that time on your holidays.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like we don't have endless amounts of...
Travel budget.
Funds and holidays for you, annual leave, like, yeah. These are the kinds of things that I think people feel... that people miss, those ins and outs in between, the things that aren't necessarily told, we know that you guys understand or you people understand. So we got to a stage where after that cancelled experience, we decided to transfer the sperm. We weren't allowed to halve it. We wanted to keep options in Sydney and in Melbourne, which for the exact reason of what's just happened is the exact reason we wanted to do that. And then we basically had in Victoria a whole heap of appointments we had to tick off before we could even be considered to have a go in the public system. And we'd made a decision. I'm not sure where we stood last time on the last episode. I mean, at that point, I could have even been questioning whether I wanted another.
Yeah.
But I started with a bit of space to get a real calling from this spirit child. I felt Brittany was starting to see something else. We all felt like there was an energy in the home.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then slowly but surely, the sperm arrived in Melbourne. We made that decision. We had finished our counselling appointments, finishing all the appointments. And the first opportunity for us to try was at the end of the year, which was around Christmas time, and we made a decision, we'll just give it a go first round next year.
Yeah.
Enter.
It was a good time for us to take a break as well. It had been, and for everybody realizes that it was a hell of a year last year, and it was just not something we wanted to just pile on top
and
of
also,
it at the end.
We're moving into IVF. I'd never done IVF before. We didn't know what days the surgeries would last, land on. Some days they weren't in hospital. So imagine you did all of the treatment and, you know, you weren't able to then get the surgeries because the hospitals were closed. So we just thought it was the safest bet to try at the early stages of 2022. So that was really exciting. Just to take you back to that stage. I mean, for me, I remember saying 2 days before we found out the news that IVF was going to be banned in Victoria for 90 days. 2 days before we found the news, I have a voice recording of my best friend and I talking. I was talking about how stressed I was with work. I had a whole heap of support coming into the end of the year, and that all just kind of fell away. And I was just left with, you know, basically... yeah, just having to pick up the pieces of lots of bits and pieces and just really full on. We're launching a business and, you know, all those kinds of things. But I remember saying to her, the only thing that's really kind of getting me through, and we also had COVID, our daycare also had COVID. So we've had Brinny, you know, for 2 months straight, which sounds ridiculous when you have a child. Of course, you expect that you would have your child, but just having that a couple of days a week, you really do forget how nice it is to have that kind of space to be able to, for me to just work at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, it had been a big couple of months. So I was leading into this. And I said to her, the only thing that's really holding me on with all of this kind of chaos of the new year and, you know, really feeling exhausted and fulfilled, but exhausted from the holidays and the Christmases and the COVIDs and the things was being able to try and put all of my eggs in the basket now
it was
for that
baby. A real carrot dangling over the other side of the year.
I was so ready. I was so, so ready to try IVF. And then 2 days later, I went to a chiro appointment, put Brittany in the car, and then started to get all of these notifications on my phone about the Victorian government announcing. Well, actually, the bullshit thing was they didn't even really announce
it.
We had to see viral videos of horrified, devastated women pleading, you know, to camera in desperation to do whatever they could to try and reverse this.
Yeah.
And they were the first videos that I was... you know, seeing before anybody actually had the decency to fucking communicate it. Yeah,
and then it was in the paper not long after that.
Well, of course it was. That's where I read it. Yeah. And so, yeah, we, it's safe to say we were gutted.
Yeah, absolutely gutted. I tend to not feel everything straight away. It takes me a little while for those emotions to kick in. But, when it did, it was really a kick in the guts. And I think it was, you know, support of friends who, you know, other blokes I know who were dropping me a line, you know, saying, "Mate, I'm really sorry to hear the news. Let me know if there's anything that I can do for you, or, you know, go and have a beer, or, you know, just catch up and have a chat." And that was when it really started to sink in for me, I think, just how much of a kick in the guts it was. You know, I am quite a patient person at times, but still.
How interesting. So until somebody had seen your pain, you hadn't seen it. Is that what you're saying?
It's just how I work sometimes. Yeah, sometimes bizarre. It takes ages for me to, you know, really kind of feel those emotions. I've always been that way. I've got some blocks in there somewhere, which we know about. But, I don't know how that came about. But then once, you know, I think I feel, maybe that's the, you know, the empath sort of side of me, you know, when someone else shows me empathy, I'm like, oh, empathy.
But to be honest, I feel like as well, you didn't really take it as bad as I think you're kind of making out. I'm not saying that you weren't gutted, but I do feel like you kind of were like, how I've been a lot in the pandemic was day by day.
Yeah. I think I was definitely gutted not to have the option anymore. That was the thing.
I think even though you're saying you've got blocks, I think sometimes you don't have to feel just because people are telling mm-hmm. you to, too.
Like, no, but I definitely think what I was gutted about was the freedom. And that's what I've come to cherish in myself, mental, physical freedom in this time that we've been in. And there was something taken away from me, and that was the freedom to have that choice to do it or not. And that was gone. And that's what really got to me, I think.
But do you know what I'm saying? Like,
I do.
Yeah. It is. It's interesting. I feel... Yeah, like we've tracked on this podcast, you know, we definitely both go into these types of hurdles or curveballs really differently.
Yeah.
I just went into activist mode.
Straight away.
Oh, my God. I had put a reel up within an hour.
How do I change this? Yeah.
I was like, because there was something in my heart that was saying to me, I don't accept this.
Yeah.
And I think after 2 years of a pandemic where you've heard people say to you, we're on this, we're working on this, we'll be patient, we'll do our bit. And so much of the emphasis has been put back onto the person.
Mm.
Yet we do feel really like these politicians are coming in and reporting the day-to-day info, but I wonder how much time they've had behind the scenes to plan what was coming. So we could see 6 months before us overseas what was happening.
Yeah.
You know, we were lucky enough to have an ability to forecast somewhat. I understand it's been different everywhere, but there has been places that we could see examples of what could be options.
Yeah.
So I suppose it got to a point for me where the questions were, where was the pre-planning for this? Yeah. You know, understanding the public system and the strain it's under and not discounting that.
I think they had their plan, but they didn't have plans after the plan. They were like not thinking, you know, if this went wrong, what would we do? What would be the next step? I think they're the things that weren't contingencies is what weren't in place. I think that was the biggest problem.
But that's my point. I feel like they've had plans for the next step, not had any time to walk away and go, okay, what can we preempt?
Mm-hmm.
What can we put in place? I think, look, and to be fair, just talking about this specific issue, for us, we have also had this ridiculous supportive, not just team in Sydney, but the government and the healthcare system has not only always been more supportive of Ben as a cancer patient in our fertility journey. So we already came to Melbourne feeling, you know, just... there was different rules here. Like, we're not saying we're entitled to have more or less, but it was different. We got less support when we moved to Melbourne already. And now we come again, and every step of the way, there were more hurdles, more things to cross, longer wait times, And yeah. now this, you know, it's we've just kind of done it in the background and then tried to keep things moving by travel and doing that strain on our family, on our finances, and not really said once we got here, fuck, the Victorian health system is fucked.
Yeah.
Not once have we said that.
Well, I had no idea until
we
got here.
Did have an idea what we've been going through this year.
No, I mean, when we first started to investigate IVF, I had no idea that, you know, Melbourne was that far kind of behind Sydney way they were doing things.
Well, yeah.
So before we moved here, I had no idea of that. I mean, we did have some conversations with people about the Melbourne IVF system with our doctor before we came, but obviously they were like, yeah, this doctor's great. These people are great.
And they were all private.
No, they did talk about the women's here and said that there's some great doctors here, but
they didn't have any specific names, you know what I mean? Like, of course, it's our sister hospital.
That's exactly my point. I'm saying these people were saying this hospital's great, but no great detail. Just a little bit of, you know, they'll look after you kind of thing.
And to be fair, not everybody's lived in different states. Like, how would you ever know how to compare health systems? I've lived in 3 states, Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria across the span of maybe the last decade.
Mm.
Yeah, I have. And I just am so surprised at...
And the differences.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and how behind Victoria is.
Well, you only have your position to imagine what someone else is like. So you're like, oh, the hospitals here are great. Hospitals in Australia must be great.
Oh, then that's the party line, right? Yeah, we're so lucky because compared to the US, we have this. And look, again, I need to say, you know, on the grand scheme of things, there is this big conversation. There's this cancel culture of like, you entitled white fucks. Like, look at what you have. People overseas, you know, there doesn't go a day where we don't note that we're lucky
privileged.
And we don't and that we don't note that we're privileged.
Yeah.
And I just feel that we're being completely muted by this conversation around your pain must cancel out someone else's pain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if we're in pain because of this fertility issue, it must mean it cancels out the person that couldn't get a scan for their lump on their leg, or the person that couldn't get a colonoscopy because they're scared they've got something going on, or the ICU, it must, you know, the IVF doctor is needed, you know, all these kinds of things that I was fucking horrifically trolled about when I voiced this. But it doesn't. Our pain and our situation doesn't cancel out those situations.
No. And I think that's a little
bit of... This is the reality. We've all got them.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit of the Australian tall poppy syndrome to a degree that you know, still lives on strong in that someone sees someone else who is complaining about something they believe is privileged because if someone else is less privileged, then they will cut them down.
And also, who decided somebody could decide? Like, how can the other privileged person decide that you're less or more privileged? Like, this is it's just such a ridiculous conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, we're not saying that someone else is less deserving. We all have wants and desires. Sure, someone who is I agree that if someone is terminally ill,
don't go in there. Don't go into that page. But don't open it.
If someone needs life-saving surgery.
No, but don't open it. Because it means that then...
Slippery slope. Yeah.
Yeah, because then it means we become people that can gauge one thing over another.
Yeah, okay.
I don't gauge anything. It's not up to us to decide this stuff.
It's us against the system.
It is. It's not people versus people.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like a person in pain versus the other person in pain.
Yeah.
It's about the fact that these issues should never have been put under an elective banner.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think that the label elective has done a lot of damage to the people going through this.
Yeah.
And even if there were restrictions, which let me just remind you, if you're doing private or live anywhere else in the world, you don't, you know, the public system when it was on and it wasn't banned, you are still calling and going on a wait list. It's not, it is already a restricted service. So don't, let me just explain that. Because of COVID, it is a restricted service. There are already restrictions with beds.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just looking for a fucking shot. You know, we were not looking for anything extra than that.
Yeah.
So Yeah, I think that...
Now we're being restricted within a restricted system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think...
Which is hard to take.
I suppose I was telling my brother today, actually, at the end of the day, though, once you kind of get up on that kind of, I don't know, that box where you start talking, you know, and we start talking about how we're passionate, and then it becomes about the Instagram conversations or the public, you know, the public psyche conversation, which at the moment, to be honest, is pretty horrific in terms of just the amount of verbal vomit that's going on to from person to person.
Yeah.
But I suppose what's really supporting me, or not even supporting, but what I keep turning to is to come back to spirit, right? And to come back to my breath, and to really return to this idea that if this spirit baby is ours, we will meet it.
Yeah.
And if we don't, there was never one.
Yeah. And that kind of makes you realize that no matter what the system, you know, that that's always the case really anyway, isn't it?
Even with fertility treatment.
Because we've had the best, well, what we've seen is the best service and have been very well looked after where we've done fertility treatment in the past. And even then, it took a long time to get pregnant. So
this is just a different journey. Yeah. And I feel because we decided IVF was the time for us and, you know, it's not very nice to be, for me personally, it took me a really long time to get here. I was always very, really
as close to natural committed as possible.
To the natural process because of the fact that this fertility issue is not mine. So I've always gone like, okay, well, that's fine, but can I hang on to as much, like, can I like have as much preservation of the way that I would like it to affect my body as much as possible? You know, preservation of my body and its homeostasis, i.e. which is not shooting injections into my body that are any more than I absolutely need, you know?
Yeah.
So it's taken me a lot. You know, I'm constantly trying to find homeostasis in my body, which is, if for those that don't really understand what that means, that natural balance, that I kind of ecosystem, that natural state.
Yeah.
And look, again, that might sound like not everybody has those options, and we're at a point where we don't. I've tried everything that I can to be that, and it's time for the next step. Having said that, again, if you're listening to this for the first time, we have done assisted IUIs. So the way that we conceived Brinny was with injections. It was just a small dose. So we've been open to everything along the way.
Yeah.
It's just I've just constantly taken those steps slowly and very considered because it feels like I don't have a lot of control. Well, I don't actually.
Yeah.
So I think for somebody that really feels more powerful with a bit of control, I've tried very hard to continue to have a say in these steps.
Mm-hmm.
And now we were ready to step and then we lost control again.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's challenging.
Which pushes us further closer to the least natural path. Like the further down the line we go, the longer we have to wait, the more we're going to have to rely on things like
IVF. And the least natural path for me as well is going private, because it is further away from, I believe, in my opinion, this is not necessarily your opinion. And when I say your, I mean you listening, or yours necessarily, Ben. But I feel that many of the private options, I did find one amazing one, Dr. Andriadis in Sydney. So I saw her. This does not include you. But some of the private doctors I've seen are very quick to jump, to very quick to head to IVF. You know, we did conceive Brinny from IUI. And it's not so much that I don't respect their approach, because they want to give you what you want as soon as possible. But I suppose in some ways, jumping straight there when you've gauged that you've got a patient in front of you that really wants to take it slow and try just kind of tells me that there's a bit of an aggression. Whereas I've found in the public system, you know, IUI wasn't even explained to me in other ways.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I feel like in a way, going private as well feels, I don't know, maybe this is my shit, I don't know, but I've from the options that I've seen here, I felt like it's been very, it's not just about the injections, it's not just about the, it's about the values. It's felt like a lot of the doctors I've met with have been very money focused and very clinical, and the language around my miscarriage and our journey was just so insensitive that I just was like, fundamentally and from a values perspective, I can't go into a team with you like this.
Yeah.
I just don't feel like we have aligned values on this. And
yeah.
I know that sounds quite woo-woo, but if I'm going to conceive a baby with someone and it's not my husband,
yeah,
I want to feel safe and yeah, I want someone to feel like they're aligned with who I am.
I think that goes for any doctor you go to, GP, psychologist, psychiatrist, yeah, whatever it may be. You need to be aligned. You need to feel like there's common ground there for you to move forward. Some doctors you go to, you're like, nah, this feels really uncomfortable. Also, we're not going any further here.
And they should be looking to get that with you. Yeah. You're paying them.
Yeah.
You're paying them a lot of money.
Some people have bad days as well. They're just like normal, you know, like everyday people. They have a bad day.
So we're just moving further and further away, back to your point. And now with this ban happening. So, you know, so basically if you haven't followed the news or you're not across this story, IVF was banned. It was reinstated 2 days later.
Banned for 90 days until the start of April, isn't it?
Yeah, it was banned. Then it was reinstated a couple of days later after the public
backlash.
I wrote a piece for Mamma Mia. There were, plenty of other women that were speaking up, plenty of other doctors. So together, I feel like collectively, we really did shift that.
Yeah.
And then was only within a week, I had called because I started to spot. And I was told on the phone that actually it hadn't been reinstated in the public hospitals. It had been reinstated privately in private hospitals, and that the nurses had not yet heard any information about any kind of timeline
for the public
of what
system,
that looked like. So it felt very sneaky.
It was just political posturing.
It felt like it. Even if it does come into play,
so we'll you say need, this.
Yeah, but even if it does, obviously it's going to take longer for a plan in a public system than a private system. Like the public system is absolutely hemorrhaging. Like it's not well, right?
Yeah.
So just say that.
Yeah.
Say, we are making a plan for the public system to reinstate it. For now, private can work immediately, and we'll keep you up to date with that.
Yeah.
So we were just so, I still am shocked. Like, we're still in the middle of this process. Mm. You know, the nurses are still like, I haven't started my bleed. So I, you know, this whole situation is still really minute by minute.
Yeah, they're still like, we'll call when you do. Yeah, and then we'll when have you get to your period and we'll see what's going on. Like, it's moment by moment.
And last night, a girlfriend
edge of your
mine,
seat stuff.
Last night, a girlfriend of mine said to me, you know, you don't have to be the strong one and you are able to, you know, let that out if you need. And I held my hands across my chest, like, to protect myself. And I just said, it's hard to explain, but you don't let go of hope until you absolutely let go of hope. Like, when you're in this, hope is all you have.
Yeah.
So you have no control over anything else. So until they say to me, until my bleed fully comes, until I can call them on the first day to say, please put me on the list for IVF. And until they ring me back and either say, no, there's other people that are going ahead of you, or B, it's not reinstated this month, then I don't lose hope. Like, I just, because that means that I have another minute or another day not feeling that despair. And I will take the hope over that despair any day of the week. It's not about, I don't feel like I can let go. It's that I can't, to survive this, I cannot choose that option over hope. You would never go back.
Yeah. And we've talked a lot about that on this podcast, on both seasons, about it all being about hope and how your hope, you know, each time you are unsuccessful, it kind of gets chipped away a little bit further and a little bit further, and For me, these things haven't really done too much to that. But it kind of hits in another way. It hasn't chipped away the hope. It's just made me sit there and go, oh, shit, now I have to put hope on hold.
I agree with you. I don't know if it's because our spirit baby is closer. You know, when you're getting closer, maybe that hope comes energetically differently.
Yeah.
And it's not, because I know in the past it's come across like hope, but I think underneath it's been desperation.
Mm-mm.
So I think that hope often feels easier when maybe it is closer or when you've had a break. I think that's why breaks are so important. You know, I've got so many friends that go back to back to back to back to back trying to conceive. And, you know, we're going to cover this in the upcoming conception circle, which we'll talk about towards the end of the episode.
Yeah.
And you guys, you know, we're so excited to meet some of you and hoping that you'll get involved. But, I think it's a really important consideration for every woman and every couple. Woman, because it's your body. And so if you're feeling not in flow, even with all of the factors that we have to go through and many of you go through, you know, how does your body plant? How does your body implant? You know, you've got to be looking at what your body's telling you to. And then on top of that emotionally, and then on top of what's going on emotionally for your family dynamic, you know?
Yeah, yeah, there is. And I think when you don't take a break, it is just stress response the whole time. You know, you're just going from one stressful scenario to another, and that becomes a habit. And then you just get locked in stress response and in fight or flight.
And I feel like that's where that desperation comes into.
Yeah, yeah. Also, like you were saying, it doesn't do your body any favors. No, you've got to be pretty much in a place of surrender and tenderness.
It's really interesting because when you say that fight or flight thing that you go through when you're in that space or coming from that space.
Mm.
The desperation may even be less about trying to conceive and more about having that experience be over.
Yeah.
It's so full on because then it means that, you know, all of that yearning in those months where you don't end up conceiving and you struggle through it. We've all done it. Like that last IUI, I should never have fucking gone.
Yeah.
But you make decisions because you've lost your sight, your clarity.
Yeah.
In a pandemic, you lose it even more so. But as my girlfriend said, who's done IVF several times now, she's like, it's a game and you want to win.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So I was going to say, it's like gambling. Yeah, I've got to keep going. One more go.
And so then, you know, you never conceive often from that space. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But I think energetically, even if you're thinking you feel like that energetically, I think you must have been feeling something different because I feel like it's almost impossible. And then you... Exactly. Get so desperate to move out of what you know deep in your heart is the timing's off. This isn't it.
Yeah.
But then you think, so what's the other option? Not doing anything.
Mm-mm.
And I think sometimes that is the option for you to get back Mm-mm. to this hope space that Ben and I are in today.
Yeah.
With all of this bullshit thrown in our face. It could break someone, but it hasn't broken us at all and it won't. And it looks like potentially and this is very scary to say, it is the most scariest time ever in our conception journey right now. It looks on paper as the most impossible possibility. I'm almost 39. We don't have the strongest sperm. We can't get into the system. We've spent tens of thousands of dollars investing in a business. We've put a lot of our personal investments in other places. It's really, if you look at it on paper today, it is probably the most unlikely place to have hope today.
Mm.
Yet, we both have it.
Yeah, we've got a lot going on, but yeah, we do.
And I do believe that's from space.
Yeah, yeah.
So... we're not thinking about the paper today. I just realized as I was saying it out loud, now I'm going to put all this in Ben's head and he probably hasn't thought about any of it.
No, I'm good. I hadn't
thought about any of it until I said it like that. And when you say it like that, it's fucking terrifying.
No, I'm good. I'm good.
But you can't deny your truth. And our truth is that we feel incredibly excited And I mean, you can speak for yourself, but I, from what I sense with you two, we feel incredibly excited and so, so, so from the bottom of my heart, so hopeful.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Because it's all we can do.
Yeah.
We can just try.
Yeah, and that's what I've always said, step by step, one step at a time. That's how we go. We move through these things.
And if they're there, they'll come.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I can't believe we're here again, though.
I know. Yeah, it feels different, though. It feels different. But we are back in a similar place, yeah.
So we've decided, we have launched a new business called The Well. And after many years of transitioning from commercial media into a completely different space,
yeah,
still obviously career change, career merging, flip. I guess, all of my different skills, but moving into, I guess, the wellness industry, I suppose. Yeah. I don't really like that term, but we decided to launch our own. At heart,
that's what you've always been doing.
I've told stories that live under that kind of banner. Yeah. I just happened to go with the shiny option of how to tell them, which was that, you know, very shiny.
Commercial media.
Yeah, famey kind of money vibe. Yeah. So pulling back, taking off all of those costumes, you're left with, I guess, the core of who you are. And that was who I was always.
Mm.
And have moved into a coaching space, as I said, had started doing one-on-one, had worked with a few people that were, many people actually, that were trying to conceive or new mothers. And we had an event scheduled for 2022 to launch with our new business, which the full schedule will be launched, could be launched. When will this go up, Ben?
Not sure. Fairly soon, in about a week, I guess.
Right. So the full schedule will be launched by the time this goes up. And what we realized was when all of this IVF stuff was going on, one of the events that I had started to talk to a local venue about was a conception circle, which I had always loved the idea of through doing this podcast, but really felt like I needed to be in a particular part of my life, personally, but also professionally, because it is a big energy to hold space for this kind of stuff. And I wanted to feel equipped. And I also wanted to make sure personally, I felt like I could do it, you know, because it is quite full on. And I feel like right now is the right time for two reasons. One, that I feel like it actually would be such a complementary thing for where I am at now to really be facilitating this kind of event, being in it with you.
Yeah.
And the second is I feel really confident and ready to take on facilitating groups and workshops and since becoming a yoga and meditation teacher. So I feel like merging those two is the perfect time. And so we had planned to do this in the middle of the year. And then with everything that went on in Victoria, we made a decision to work through I worked crazy days the last few days to try and pull this off and have it brought forward by 3 months to launch at the end of February. So Conception Circle is a 6-week weekly circle. It's a gathering of people, like-minded people that are going through conceiving. So fertility treatment. Perhaps you are going through a conception process naturally, but it's taking a lot longer than you thought. Maybe you're still navigating what your fertility looks like, but it's something that you're yearning for and are not really getting to the places that you thought you would at the timelines you were.
And I think
so many different, you know, different factors going into the type of person that might be interested in joining us.
Yeah. And I think it, now that I think about it, almost like going through it naturally as well, you know, circles like these can be so, so important because for us going through IUI and now looking at IVF, it's a constant conversation because we are, it's front of mind. We're going to these meetings with people. We're talking about it all the time. But I think, you know, for a lot of people, when you're doing it naturally, you know, you're just having sex and then you wait for a period, doesn't happen. Oh, okay, we'll try again. There's no real constant conversation. So I think this is super important.
And it's personal because you don't, you know, I'm saying to a friend, I'm on my way to the hospital to do this. Whereas when you're having sex at home in the privacy of your home.
You're not saying, hey, we
some people do. But it's not, it's a little different. And I think there's common, also a bit of imposter syndrome. Well, not imposter syndrome, but that ridiculous thing where you're paying, cancel that another person's pain. I think sometimes people feel really guilty about saying how much they're struggling when you've got people like us or people that have maybe been trying for 10 years or, you know, everybody has almost like, well, society puts a ranking system on this, which
everyone's journey is valid.
It's not the case. And that's why all different walks of fertility journey are invited to this, because I think it's really important that not only do we support each other in wherever we're at, but it also gets our pole out of our own ass and understand that it is a very isolating journey, but it's a very narcissistic journey. Yeah, you do become very obsessed with your own experience.
Yeah.
And I think it can be nice when you hear other people's journeys too, to not only connect, but also just to get out of your own bubble for a bit. And that's not a judgment. I'm there with you, you know, but it does help. So
it's like I was saying the other day, like it's like a birthing class. You know, when you're in a class with 8 or 9 or however many other couples and you're, you know, talking about what you're going to do, you know, in those last couple of months and into the birth, it's so important having those people around and seeing other people's faces and going, oh yeah, okay, this person, you know, looks as nervous as I do, or, you know, they didn't know about this, just like I don't know about this. And you feel, you know, you feel less alone on the journey for sure.
And just be mindful. Ben used that example with complete empathy for those of you that may not have yet fallen pregnant. You know, it's tricky. Like, because we understand that there's also this, you know, I definitely had it when I was talking about the IVF struggle. I have a baby. Yeah. You know, we have a baby. And I know that the first baby with fertility treatment will always feel differently to this. It is its own journey, and I'm not discounting our pain, but I know what it feels like before we got Bryn, and I know that journey and that feeling, and this is just a bit of an acknowledgement of that, that, you know, one doesn't cancel out the other, but I do, I'm with you in the, I guess, the uniqueness and the heat that that particular time brings. The spikiness of it's really hard.
Yeah, completely. In the trenches.
Across the 6 weeks, we'll cover a lot of stuff. We talk about relationships. We'll cover ways to support through grief and loss and the different versions of that. We'll talk about, exactly as we said, how different fertility journeys or trying to conceive journeys are different but often have very similar themes and feelings. And really connect on that in the beginning, just to ensure that we all come from a respectful place with everyone's different journey and use it as almost like a bit of, I don't know, homework to kind of step out of your own world for a second and not only gain support, but be support, you know, to others in your community. I think sometimes we're so used to asking for help or having a shoulder that's given to us to cry on. And I think it is also a really positive thing for us to get that part of ourselves up where we can be strong enough to hold each other as well. Because you feel a little bit like the victim all the time too. So, and we'd go through a whole heap of different processes, tools, practices that you can take home with you through this conception journey. I will guide you through many meditations. If you're not a meditator, that's okay. It is really a spoken circle when you feel like you can speak. It's not something you have to speak in. And the meditation element and the practices and the journaling are all led, you know, they're really, as you may already know, it's a pretty, pretty casual approach that I go to. There's not going to be, the space is absolutely beautiful and it's, a gorgeous kind of very, angelic type of space. It's very sacred. However, my approach and who I am is that everybody feels invited and included and held. You know, it doesn't really matter if this thing has been something you've done before or not. Better if you haven't, because you may need it more than the average person. We talk about conscious conception towards the end of the 6 weeks, so we can leave on a real, I guess, an actionable kind of feeling where we feel like we are able to walk away and continue to have some control over this process.
Almost
when you
like
don't.
A launching point.
But we definitely do sit in emotion. We definitely do discuss emotion like anger that we often feel real shame about. So, you know, I've lived this experience. Ben and I have lived this experience and teaming with all of the study I've been doing and the work across the last few years, I think that it is a really wonderful time to invite you to join us. Ben will be there for a couple of the sessions as well. We welcome couples. So if you both want to buy a spot and come in and do it together, it'll be every Monday night from the 28th of Feb at 8 p.m. in the inner west suburbs in Melbourne.
Yeah. And I think just to add to that, I think for blokes, it can be a real opportunity to really open up and find some new spaces within yourself. That sounds a little bit esoteric, but it really is a good opportunity to, like I said, to open yourself up and, you know, put you in a good position to support your partner going through these
and yourself.
Going through this journey.
And I think
I'm yourself. Yeah.
And I work very intuitively. So the group isn't the group dynamic or the group event, the circle isn't decided yet, right? So I will merge how I facilitate this depending on who comes.
Mm.
So if I've got three blokes and 10 women,
yeah,
it is going to be evenly led for those experiences. Mm-hmm. You guys won't feel like you're the 3 out of the 10. You know, I will hold you in that.
Yeah.
So don't think you're coming into a women's circle. You know, however the circle lands is what I will respond to. That's my job, to hold you in that. So just come if it's something you feel like you want, and working out how that looks and how you'll fit in will be my job to make you feel safe in that. Yeah. You don't have to worry about that. You're not entering a women's space, and women aren't entering a couple space if you're doing this solo. It is a space and a gathering in a circle of whoever is called to come.
Yeah.
Everyone is invited.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we can't wait to meet you all there.
To meet some of you, yeah. We will do an online option, I think, as well, which we've realised is potentially needed. So if you want to register your interest, the tickets will go on sale. I think the tickets go on sale, they might already be on sale, to the Conception Circle on Monday the 31st of January.
Mm-hmm.
With that email, if you're on the Well Hub, the Well Hub list, or the Well membership, sorry, the Well list. I'm still getting yeah, all the words and everything, all the new products right. The Well Hub is our membership. The Well is the business. Or my personal mail list, you'll get an email on the Monday. And if you have already received that, by the time you listen to that, you can go back in, just respond, reply to the email and say, I'd love to be involved in the online.
Yeah.
And we'll file your name off and make sure that we contact you first when we do decide to offer it online, because there'll only be, we can only facilitate 100. I don't think I would do that big of a group though for this type of thing. It'll, you know, I think I might do several intimate groups.
Yeah. You can also DM us on our Instagram as well if that's how you'd like to contact us.
The Well _hub.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. And thanks for those of you that signed the petition. If you are a person anywhere in the country or the world that's going through this in this time, we see you. And we're really hoping that this podcast and the circle and the different things, the Facebook group that we do, offers some form of support. You know, it definitely feels really productive and healthy for us to be doing more of this as we go through it. And we hope that it is of some service to some of you, if not all of you out there.
Indeed. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll catch you on the next episode of Bijou Baby.
Mm.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been another Bijou Podcast production.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.